one podcast, mining the Magic the Gathering community for salt. This is the Howling Salt Mine.
It's the Howling Salt Mine. The Howling Salt Mine.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Howling Salt Mine podcast. The podcast where we delve into those salty minds of the Magic the Gathering community, find the saltiest posts, the salty stories that you love to hear, put them in our mind cart, and bring them right back up to you, our dear prospectors at home. As always, I'm your host, Sam, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Mike and Tony. Say hey, guys.
What up?
Hello, hello.
So we're coming pretty hot off of a dope weekend of playing games.
We are, but you know what I miss?
What?
When you'd always say the thing that I say hello with back. It made me, I loved that.
It validated you?
I miss that validation. Give it back.
What did you say? Hello? Hello.
Yeah. Hello, hello. Yeah.
Hello, hello. And you know what? I appreciate you disrupting me because you made me realize that didn't do the fucking thing.
Yeah. I noticed.
Before we go any further, you know we got to shout them out, our nice patrons.
Nice.
For being so nice.
Nice.
And this week we have Alex Balix, Cream Bean, Hephaestus Bolts, Prime Speaker Florian, Yafe Judge, Dr. Black, Accidental TPK, Big Dog Royal Flood, and Digi Mans. Thank you all for being so nice. Thank you for your support.
Pew, 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 pew.
At first I thought it was in alphabetical order, and then I was like, oh, it's not.
It is with their real life human names, except for Digi.
Gotcha.
So before we talk about this amazing weekend of games that we had, I just gotta mention that I've been drawing a fuck ton of custom tokens for people. And there's some good ones, dude.
I know we just learned that you put an L in an interesting word, but you just put an R. You just put an extra R in a word there,
you
too.
Did.
What did I put in?
What have you been doing
recently?
Drawing?
Oh,
I mean,
play the
you
clip.
Were drawing earlier.
Was it drawing?
I guess you were drawing.
Drawing
yeah,
now,
you were
but you
drawing.
Were drawing.
Yeah.
Drawing?
You were definitely drawing.
Drawing is a one-syllable word, and you just make a weird sound and poop it out your mouth. Like, I think we can all agree that there is no correct pronunciation.
That's true. It is mostly
drawing.
It's mostly garbled syllable. It's D and then
yeah, it's like that's got to be one of the most confusing words for non-English speakers to learn,
especially when you put an extra R in it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I did interrupt you. What were you saying?
I was just talking about how I've been drawing tokens like fucking crazy left and right lately, and man, there's some fucking good ones, dude. It takes all my self-control to not immediately take a picture of them and post them online. I send them to you guys, and then I send them to Tim Gold Sabertooth, and I'm like, look how great this is, and you know. it's so I have like a tiny outlet for that, but not a big one.
Prospectors, tell Sam if you don't mind if he spoils them in advance. Release him from this prison.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, if
for
you're
real.
Cool with me posting them out there, I definitely can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had something with one of our New Zealand patrons where when I drew that Sam and Frodo fusion dance custom
which
set for that
so
one
fucking
guy.
Good.
R.I.P.
I posted it online. Like, it was taking fucking forever to get to New Zealand because, you know, that's just how the mail works. And I waited a really long time and I was checking in with him and I was like, did it arrive yet? And he's like, no, not yet. I was like, it's probably going to show up next week. And then I waited like a couple more weeks and I posted it and he was like, oh, it's so cool to see it for the first time. Can't wait to get them. And I was like, motherfucker. Like, I thought I waited long enough, dude. I waited like a month and a half, but
sorry,
it still
dude.
Just hadn't arrived. So I try not to spoil it.
I mean, that's probably about as far as a packet can travel. Like
literally like to the other half of the
more
world.
Distant.
Like, yeah. I think it would only be delayed longer if there was like very robust customs or something, but
there's too much power in this token. Like it cannot cross borders.
Yeah, you have to declare it as a as an imported good.
The fucking deadly weapon.
But I wanted to gush a little bit about our Magic the Gathering hangout that we had this past weekend. So Alan from Mental Misplay and I have the same birthday, which is in early March. And we finally got our act together and set up a day to get all the homies to the local LGS. Shout out to TJ's Cafe in fucking wherever it is. Medford, I think. I don't know.
Milford.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tony.
Low hanging fruit, Tony.
Yeah.
You're usually more creative than that. This, even if you're raunchy, it's usually more creative than that.
Keep it I don't up. Know what you guys are talking about. I just like that town. Like, whatever.
Sure. So it was a dope day. We had people come up from New Jersey and New York. Our buddy CJ, Amar, John came up from New Jersey. And just a bunch of the local crew were able to get together. It was super, super fun. But one of the best parts about it was I was assembling the last few cards for my new CISA CDH list.
Hey.
So we get there and I'm just pouring over like... They have these glass cases that have all the, like, the super rare singles and stuff. And I'm just like going through everything, trying to find these cards. Was able to find a lot of things and got a lot of like pretty cool secret layer versions of stuff that I wouldn't normally get. But I'm like, hey, you know, I'm going to play this in like a tournament. I might as well be a little bit fancy. Get like the
Did
really
you get duels?
Cool looking Mount Doom. No, I didn't get duels.
Okay.
I'll
no,
proxy
well,
that
you
shit.
Said you're playing it in like a
proxy tournament.
So I assume.
Proxy tournament.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'll buy the duels there, please.
Yeah. Topdeck.gg, all of their tournaments are proxy friendly, which is super fucking dope for people who want to get into CDH but don't have the fungibles to afford all those fucking expensive reserve list bullshits. So it was just super fun looking through all these cards and assembling the list. Mike showed up and we were like chatting about the cards. He's helping me find a bunch. So now we come to like the highlights. So there's some cards that are just like random rares that are like a penny or, you know, a quarter or something. Like Urtai the Resurrected is a really awesome toolbox interaction piece in Sisse.
We should read Urtai. It's that good. This is a neat card. I mean, you're going to hate it, Tony, because it's...
Isn't it just the counter on a stick?
It is. But I feel like for some reason, as much as you hate blue, like Dimir is the blue that you're most okay with.
That is true.
That seems so true, right? So this is Dimir. So I got to push this one angle that I've got for you. If I've got it.
But if it just says counter shit on a stick, I'm still not going to like it.
Well,
there's some more nuance there, which I think is pretty cool. Yeah, so Urtai Resurrected, it costs 2, a blue and a black. It's a 3/2 legendary creature, Phyrexian Human Wizard. It has Flash, and then it has an ETB, or an EZTB, as we might say. When Urtai Resurrected enters the battlefield, choose up to one. So the first option is counter target spell, activated ability, or triggered ability. And then the controller of that effect that you're countering draws a card. The second option is destroy another target creature or planeswalker. And then again, the controller of that creature or planeswalker draws a card. It's just this really dope piece in Sisse because you can tutor legendary creatures right out of your library, provided Sisse has high enough power. So, you know, you can like pop out an Urtai and like counter a fully overloaded Cyclonic Rift, which is something I did recently. You can use it to stop Thassa's Oracle from popping off. You can use it to just destroy a creature that might be part of a creature combo. Like, it is such a dope removal piece. And it's like a fucking dollar or something. It's wicked, wicked cheap.
I definitely cheated with this card that weekend, actually. I thought it hit artifacts, so I milled someone out by flickering Urtai a million times to make them...
Oh, you did do that
to,
on the one ring.
To destroy their one ring to mill them out while they had protection from everything. So, sorry.
Does not work.
Uh-oh. Anyway.
But it's got a bunch of like really cool niche uses. I mean, even if somebody's Thoracle has already resolved... Or is about to resolve, you could, instead of countering the Thoracle, you could just force them to draw the cards so they deck themselves. Hey, there's a bunch of like silly things you can kind of do with it, but it's super dope. So we were able to find that. But the one thing we couldn't find, there are three cards we couldn't find. One was Oath of Teferi, which is like literally a penny rare. No one's playing that thing outside of Sisse with Planeswalker combos.
And maybe other Super Friends decks.
Yeah, other Super Friends decks. Aminatu. Classic planeswalker that can be your commander. And then Nicol Bolas, Dragon God.
The Sisse list runs Dragon God?
Yeah, dude. That's why I love Sisse so much.
But like, you have never... Is that in your deck, Mike?
Yeah, it comes out when I win. literally just does as it? Part of
it,
the combo.
It only comes out on the winning turn, pretty much.
That's probably why I never see it. Yeah. I feel like it always hits a point where it's just like, oh,
I don't give a shit anymore. I
yeah,
lose.
I'm like, yeah. I've lost. Okay, I don't fucking care. Yeah.
Yeah.
With Aminatu, Oath of Teferi, and Dragon God, Dragon God gets Aminatu's flicker ability, and then they can both activate twice. So they can flicker each other, renew.
Even now, I don't care.
Like, yeah. Then don't ask about it. Don't fucking ask about it. So anyways, that was the one thing we couldn't find. So we're looking through the sets to see where Dragon God is printed, and one of them is Ravnica Remastered. And Mike is like... You know, again, it's the birthday celebration. Mike's feeling particularly generous. He's like, dude, what if we just split a box of Ravnica Remastered and ripped all the packs and tried to find a bolus? And I was like, dude, I just dropped like $200 on cards. I cannot just buy a booster box to rip it. And then we go up to the cash register and Mike is like, and I'll take a booster box of Ravnica Remastered too.
Nice.
Cut to us like just ripping packs before games between mulligans.
Yeah, someone would mulligan as all the other three player were done, and we'd be like, okay, everyone, here's a pack while they shuffle up. Rip it.
So we're digging. We're just trying to find this thing. And, you know, got some amazing pulls. There were like two or three Deathrite Shamans in there, which have two toughness. I do know that now.
They do.
There are like a bunch of, I think you got a couple shocks in there.
I got
like
some shocks.
It was a pretty good box.
There were some nice things in it.
So we get down to the last pack in the box, and it's like later in the day. And Emmett, our buddy Emmett, also goes by like Chuck Cheddar on Discord and stuff like that. He's an awesome CDH player and a good friend. Emmett has like the golden touch with booster packs. I think I've talked about this before, but one time when we were also at TJ's playing, I had a mystery booster pack that I purchased. And Emmett held it up and he was like, there's going to be a Mana Crypt in here, and handed it to me. And there was a Mana Crypt in it. So he's got this like golden touch with packs. So it's the very last pack. And we're like, we should have Emmett open it. And Emmett rips it. And of course, the mythic is Nicol Bolas Dragon God.
Yeah. Nice.
We all just like went ballistic. We were like, we fucking got it. Like, justified the purchase immediately.
Yeah, absolutely.
So good. Toss it right in the deck. And since then, you know, my other LGS had the Aminatu and the Oath of Teferi, so I have everything now.
Oh, nice. That's great to hear.
Yep. So I got it all. But man, it was just such a fun day. Shout out to John, Useless Knowledge, for giving me a giant Salt Shaker deck box, a 3D printed Salt Shaker deck box.
Yeah.
Which I have right here, so you guys can check it out. It's so good, dude. It's also like a great prop for whenever I'm on camera, those very rare moments. But
yeah.
Sick.
But man, it was fun. There's just something about like hunting down a specific card that, and then you get it, that still gives me that like primal Magic the Gathering joy. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the joy of ripping packs. You know, it's
exactly
like a fucking high.
Yeah. I mean, ripping the packs, but also even just like digging through the card catalog too was like, oh, I found
so
it.
So much,
you know?
Fun. Yeah. Because it would be like, okay, we need this one card. It was printed in these three sets. You take this binder, I'll take this binder, and we're like flipping through them to try to find it. And you know, I don't usually go for secret layer stuff. Like every once in a while I will, but if it's the only option in LGS, I'm like, hell yeah, give me that fucking shit, dude.
Yeah, for sure. I feel that.
And we got some stuff for Mike's deck too. We're both on Olivia Mobilized for War now as like a haste enabler.
Mm-hmm.
And they had two copies. One was the black and white art, and the other one was the full color art. I don't know if you saw my message to you, Mike.
See.
We got them both for like $1.50 each, and I learned after that the black and white one is $1.50, and the full color one is like $10. And they just had them stacked together for some reason. So it was pretty good.
Because they're both the same name, and somebody looked up the one and was like, "It."
Yeah, and like the color art is already almost black and white. There's just like a little red in there, you know?
Yeah.
It really isn't much of a difference. But yeah, man, I just loved it. It was a good time. Played games from like noon, because again, I was building a deck for the
dusk
first
until
hour.
Dawn.
Yeah, literally, I was there with the final pod after they closed. Like they locked the front door and still let us hang out and play.
Hell yeah.
And then a bunch of us shot down to Alan's house and played until like 2 a.m., maybe a little later. A lot of games that day. I played like 12 games.
Nice. Appropriate amount.
Hell yeah,
and we
dude.
Played a lot of triple Sisse pods with me, Mike, and our buddy CJ on a Sisse list. It was fucking so stupid. It was great, man.
Yeah. And saw a cool Lannis list too.
Oh yeah, yeah. John had a super cool Lannis list. The
like
the cryptozoologist.
Lannis?
Yeah.
The new one, the clue version of Lannis.
I think they're both clue related, but the new one generates clues.
I mean, like from the clue set.
Oh,
I know
oh,
that that
yeah,
is
yeah.
confusing. Yeah, the new one is Lannis Genetics Expert, and it's a Simic clue token combo deck. It's kind of like Gabe. It just has all these like crazy layered combos.
Yeah, like two piece combos that all interact.
Very, very cool.
Interesting. Well, did you find any salt whilst you were at this local gaming store?
Did we? Did we have any salty games?
That was really just my attempt to segue. I wasn't actually looking for
no,
salt.
No, but the segue is good. It's a thought-provoking segue as well.
Yeah, it is thought-provoking.
That's what I do, you know.
I think the main salt we had was that the final CDH game I played that night was literally like 2.5 hours.
Oh my God.
That was a beast.
I was on Sisse. CJ was on Blue Farm, I think. Amar was on... Oh, man, what the fuck was he on?
Clearly, he didn't matter.
He was
Get
on.
Fucked.
He was on Thrasios.
Oh, yeah, he was on Thrasios Dargo, I think.
Dargo.
No, yeah, Thrasios Krom? Yeah, he was on Thrasios Krom. He was on, like, a really weird list. And then our friend Jeff was on
an Italian
list, yeah. And it was really, really interesting because Italian, man... If people don't know Talion, like, look it up. It's the one where you pick a number and then you get to draw a card whenever a spell is cast or a creature spell is cast that has power and toughness, one or the other, equal to that number. So you pick two and you're just drawing a fuck ton of cards in a CDH game. And it's a really interesting control list in Dimir. But man, the win cons fucking suck ass. Like he was in, Jeff was in such a commanding position that whole game, but he could not close it out. And it wasn't really salty, but like we were ready to go at like 7:30 and played that game until 9:30.
If that game had happened like 3 hours earlier, it would have been cool.
Yeah, it would have been super cool. But when everyone else had packed up and they were like, we could have got another game in, and they're just spectating, it was still like a nail biter. It was a crazy game.
Yeah, it was. It was tight all the way through.
And I ended up cinching it in the end, and I mulled to four in the beginning. And literally it was because I burned all of my interaction on multiple turns just to save a Selvala, the mono green Selvala, so I could like have a good mana dork. Like literally burned so much interaction just to keep that one mana dork around.
Well, because you had nothing else, right? But it's not just a mana. Don't you draw two off of fucking Selvala if you have the bigger creature when something comes in? Just does like so much.
You can, but it also enables other people to draw too. So I don't know.
Sure, but
for a mana dork, like that's what Sisse needs to win, so burning all my shit to keep it alive was the
move.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
I think my saltiest moment, and it was a good piece of practice before the tournament that we go to, is, I mean, it wouldn't work in a tournament, but CJ speech played me into not resolving a toxic deluge. He was like, what if you just didn't cast that? Like, that's gonna fuck him up, it's gonna fuck me up. There was like a known force of will in his hand too. So he was like, I'm going to have to force this. Meanwhile, Sam was clearly, to me, going to win the next turn. And I was like, okay, so that means you've got something for him next turn, right? And he was like, well, I mean, I got to counter the deluge. And I was like, so I didn't guarantee that he had something to deal with Sam. And I didn't like explain more that if I didn't do this, Sam was going to win if people didn't stop him. So I just assumed. And then I passed. And then... guess what happened, Tony? Yeah.
And then I won the game. Yeah. And CJ was like, I don't have anything for that. It was such a funny moment because CJ had, he had two fucking lands in play. He was like so land starved that whole game and was making it work with his own Sisse list, was like doing okay with rocks and dorks and stuff like that. But I was like, I had so much fucking mana on my board and a toxic deluge would have removed like two creatures from my board and would have removed like six from CJ's board. And CJ is basically like, if you do that to me, I have to counter it because I'm fucking out of the game if I lose my board state. And Sam can rebuild super easily.
Yeah.
And you guys are really more talking about like rebuilding and like the current board state and did not talk about the fact that I was about to win on my turn.
Yeah, that you were like presenting a win.
And when it went to my turn, CJ was like, oh, yeah, I can't stop him from winning. and he was like, you were going to cast the deluge to stop him from winning? And Mike was like, yes. And it's like, it was just a, like this one little piece of communication didn't happen. And it just fucked up the whole game.
I'm honestly kind of surprised you did that, Mike. I feel like normally you're pretty strong-willed about those things.
Normally I am, so it was a good reminder to not do that.
Ooh, with an iron fist.
The thing is, it would have gotten cast, and I still wouldn't have explained it well enough, so he still would have forced it. And then we just would have lost, and there wouldn't have been a force of will in hand. So that's what I was worried about happening. That seemed worse than going to Sam's turn with at least a force in somebody's hand.
Yeah, but it was super fun. It was a really, really good day of jamming games.
Sick.
Literally, I brought 10 decks and I just played Sisse and then played one casual game.
Also not surprised.
Yep. I did end up playing a bunch of casual games over at Alan's house later in the
That's
night.
Good.
But,
That's good.
That was
good.
I was glad I brought the decks, but it was very, very funny how it all laid out.
Nice, dude.
Well, you guys want to get into it? Let's hit this salt. You know what I mean?
Let's do it.
But Sam, what is salt?
Great question, Tony. And thank you for asking.
Yeah.
Salt is frustration in the game, as we like to say. It's an umbrella term, and it encompasses a lot of different feelings in the game of Magic. Whether it's 1v1 or EDH, you're going to encounter some kind of salt when you're playing Magic. Little grains of salt can be something like the vibe being off, maybe people aren't as friendly as you were hoping or as welcoming as you were hoping at an LGS. You're still having good games, but you're just not able to relax and really have a good time. Bigger grains of salt can be somebody whining throughout an entire game, complaining that their shit is getting removed, being really insistent and controlling on the types of moves you're trying to make, trying to kind of tell you what to do and stuff like that.
Not letting you cast your toxic deluge.
Yeah, I mean, you know, misplaying and letting your cool friend
the life,
win.
You know?
Giving your friend a birthday present every time he wins and saying that that's the reason.
And really large grains of salt, or full shakers, as we like to say, are, you know, people getting like physically violent when they get salty, which you might be listening right now and be like, that sounds fucking crazy. Whoever does that. Listener, let me tell you, we've got some fucking stories. Yeah. This is episode 93, and we got some fucking stories that we've heard. So it does happen. You know, people openly crying in an LGS might make you feel really fucking weird, which is a different kind of salt. Like, there's some fucking weird shit that happens out there. And that is reserved for the full shakers. And we're going to talk about everything from those small grains to the full shakers, because we want to learn about salt. We want to talk about salt. So hopefully we won't be salty in a future game and just get a little bit more self-awareness. You know, it's an educational podcast, as we like to say.
Hell yeah.
Well, should we get into it, guys?
Let's dive on in there.
Let's dive.
Take me deep into the mind, baby.
Let's go.
Oh, I will.
Let's ride.
Let's ride.
We ride the cart. The cart.
Let's ride.
I always envision this moment like being where the cart has been like cruising along an entryway, and then
it dips down
a ramp that it rides for the rest of the episode.
Oh man! Real quick aside, you know how we always make jokes about OSHA?
Yeah.
And like OSHA violations in the mine and like OSHA issues and stuff.
I saw this come in.
One of our listeners emailed us and let us know that OSHA actually has no jurisdiction over the mines. And there's a specific government organization that regulates safety in mining operations, and it's MSHA, Mine Safety and Health Administration.
Gotcha. All right, OSHA doesn't give a fuck what we do, but MSHA
really
gonna
cares.
Get after it.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
OSHA is gonna be approving all non-mine activities for us. So
when we're
up above just chatting about non-mine related things, no violations there.
MSHA. Well, I assume MSHA will let us into the mine. So
yeah,
let's
they allow
get
it.
On in there.
I was thinking about that because I was like, you probably shouldn't ride in a minecart. That seems so dangerous. All right, let's get into it. So we got our first story here. This one comes to us from our lovely website. It was a website submission. If you haven't checked out our website, it's howlingsaltmine.com or thehowlingsaltmine.com will also get you there. We have our latest episode on there. We have some fun reviews on there, like the Three Unfunny Guys Reading Reddit Post review is posted up there for all time.
As it should be.
And we've got links to our merchandise on there. And also, we have a place where you can submit these salty stories. So this one comes to us from our buddy Jan, and the post is titled, "You Should Read Your Cards," which is good advice, honestly.
Yeah, you should read your cards. It is good advice.
Really?
You don't even need to put them in a deck. if you're just thumbing through your collection, you're allowed to read those cards. You get wow. to read them.
That's yeah. a fucking hot tip.
I know. Not everybody knows this, but no one's going to. Emsha will not stop you from reading your own cards.
You. Let's get into it. Cheers, fellow bearded rock persons. How did you know we all have beards? Here's my story in which I hit the mother load. The whole thing happened in spring 2022. Kamigawa was released a few weeks ago, and I was looking for a game on Spelltable out of boredom. I joined a lobby where there were already two players. Power level was listed as mid. After a short time, a person joined who had probably previously been in a game in which MLD was played. The person, who we'll call Tim, joined the lobby and before even saying hello, started demanding that he would only play if we didn't play shit like MLD or Stacks. You could literally taste the salt through the speakers.
Mm.
The way Tim spoke at this time was something I'd only heard of before. It was like the horror stories from the internet. There was a little discussion between him and one of the other people present about what was okay and what was not okay about Stacks and its definition. In the course of the discussion, the salt content decreased somewhat. We agreed that none of our decks would do anything in this direction and started playing. The pod consisted of Tim on an Ishin deck, Kevin on Go Shintai, Mike on Dinosaurs, and myself on Felisa, Fang of Silverquill. The plan of my deck is to sacrifice Gideon Planeswalkers and finish off my opponents with Flying Inklings. It is a Gideon tribal deck, and Gideon in general needs to die.
Uh-oh.
That seems like a really wild play. I dig that. That's cool, man.
Gideon, huh?
On my first turn, I played an Ozolith and nothing else. After that, my deck did nothing. My deck is slow and has a high mana curve. I only drew lands and spells with around 5 CMC. So all I did was land drop, go. The rest had a moderate start and left me alone while they developed their boards. We were now on turn 7-ish, and my deck was still doing nothing while the Dino player and the Ishin player were becoming a problem. But no problem for me. I now have 2 of my 3 board wipes in hand. It also turned out that Salty Tim is actually a cool guy. Kevin and Mike are also excellent players, so I deal with the Dinos and Ishin with my first board wipe. Ishin then had a very explosive turn, and I was forced to play another board wipe against certain defeat. Mike then tries to take over the game with Go Shintai. I top deck Farewell and wiped for the 3rd time that game. Oof. After that, the game was open again and went back and forth between all the players. We've been playing for about 40 minutes by now, and my deck is finally doing its thing while I draw cards with Liliana Dreadhorde General and still have my Ozolith in play. So I'm kind of winning. Once again, the board is handled, this time by one of the other players. At this point, I only have Luxior, an Ashnod's Altar, some Mana Rocks, and the Ozolith with 7 loyalty counters and some +1/+1 counters on it. I draw Yawgmoth's Vile Offering, I check my yard, and come to the conclusion that Liliana is the best target. So I bring Liliana back to the battlefield and equip her with Luxior. At this moment, I read Liliana's ultimate for the first time in my life. I swear. Okay, we got to pause and fucking read this.
Yeah. See, I thought this was going to go the Gideon direction because there's a Gideon that ults and exiles all permanents. So once he mentioned the Ozolith, I was like, okay.
So Liliana Dreadhorde General costs 4 and 2 black. And she has a static ability. It says whenever a creature you control dies, draw a card. She comes in with a 6 loyalty, by the way. So her +1 is create a 2/2 black zombie creature token. Her -4 says each player sacrifices 2 creatures. And her -9, which is the ultimate we're talking about here, says each opponent chooses a permanent they control of each permanent type and sacrifices the rest.
Oh, baby.
This card is crazy.
Okay. So the story continues. I see the board state with the Ozolith and the Gideons in my hand. This takes a moment as I struggle with whether I want to win like this. One of the other players asks what's going on, as the game has been played quite quickly by all sides so far, and I explain the situation in detail, saying that I can win in 3 turns. So I announce that I'm going to put the Ozolith counters on Liliana and activate the ultimate in the 2nd main phase. Tim just says, "Yep, fuck this, I'm out," and quits. Mike, Kevin, and I agree that I would have won, and we start a new game with another person who happened to come into the lobby. During game 2, I realized that Mike was a bit short on words. However, midway through the 2nd game, he congratulated me on my win with a weird interaction. To be honest, I still feel sorry for Tim. Thank you guys, and keep on mining, and don't wake the Balrog. Oh, it says don't wake the Salrog. Is that like the salty Balrog?
Yeah, it must be. It's for when we dig too deep, right?
Yeah, too deep and too greedily.
Yeah. Yeah. Thankfully, there's so much salt at the surface that we don't need to. I have no drive to dig deeper into the mines.
Dude, I got to shout out a couple spicy interactions here. So the first one is the Ozolith, which is whenever a creature you control leaves the battlefield, if it had counters on it, you put it on the Ozolith. And then at the beginning of combat on your turn, you can move counters from the Ozolith onto a target creature. That, with Luxior, which makes your planeswalkers creatures, or Gideon, which can just activate and become a creature, is fucking super spicy. I've never heard really of anyone cool. using the Ozolith that way to like be a battery for loyalty counters. That's fucking sick. Yeah.
I've definitely seen that.
That's fucking dope.
But just moving the counters isn't enough, because then isn't it +1/+1 counters, not loyalty counters? Isn't there like some weird thing
you have to specifically hit?
You have to
loyalty also.
Yeah, it's got to be specific for loyalty.
It's a tough situation.
I feel for Tim. You know, he's coming in hot off of a game that was clearly shitty, feeling the salt. Clearly got like staxed out and hit with some MLD and didn't want to have none of that. And, you know, the power level is mid, which obviously up to interpretation, but I wouldn't expect to see that kind of stuff. But I don't know. It's hard, man. Planeswalker ults, like who's out here ulting planeswalkers?
Yeah.
I think I've ulted 2 planeswalkers in my whole life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Also, 3 board wipes into a win con that's a board wipe. Because let's be honest, like the Liliana thing, that is a win. It's aiming as a win con, right? It's not trying to drag the game out from there. Like maybe people leave some strong stuff out and you're not quite able to close it. But the idea is you're closing the game out from there. But 3 board wipes into it when you've just had a game that's very frustrating in a similar way, that's pretty brutal.
Yeah. I don't really think that it is the Liliana here that's the problem, honestly. I think it was the 3 board wipes from prior.
Yeah.
Like, it's just frustrating. Like, no matter what you do, if you build out your shit and you do that time and time again and it just keeps getting wiped, you're like, oh my God, just fucking let the game end. Like, somebody win. And then, but then when they get to it and they're like, okay, it's going to take me 3 more turns, but I'm going to win. Like,
yeah,
it's just like frustrating. So I get it. But you can't plan for everything, right? That's not like stacks. It's like stupid shit. Like, I love if your deck didn't board wipe 10 times, but like, you know, like you can't have a pregame conversation of like, I just had a bad game, so now I want to not have anything bad happen to me. Like, that's what basically is almost like being alluded to.
That, you know? That is so true. You can't be like, hey, I'm coming in off a hard game. Can you guys just like baby me a little bit in this one?
Yeah, can I just win actually and pop off?
Please let me win. Also, I do want to point out, I think that the Liliana ult is technically the 5th board wipe, because this person cast 3 and then they mentioned that the board state got handled by someone else, which I think implies that there was another board wipe because there was nothing else after there.
Yeah.
And then Liliana's ult is a 5th board wipe, technically.
I'm almost wondering if in the interaction, though, that they played it wrong, because they could have moved the +1/+1 counters on to Liliana, but that doesn't translate to loyalty counters.
There were 7 loyalty on the Ozolith.
Oh, okay, okay.
And you move every counter over. So.
Yeah, no, that I know. I just didn't know if it was loyalty or not specifically.
Which is cool, because they must have been using Luxior to like load that thing up like a battery. And now I'm like seeing how the deck works, which is like Gideon's, killing the Gideons, bringing them back, and loading it up like a huge battery just so you can ult immediately with the Luxior.
I love a story that lets us understand how a deck functions.
Yeah, it's cool. I feel like I have a full picture of this deck. It's spicy, man. I mean, a few too many board wipes for me, but the interaction is super, super cool.
What do we think about the salt rating here on this one?
I mean, it's high salt, sort of. I'd say the salt rating is about as high as the power level that was listed on this spell table room. It's mid, you know? It's not super high salt because, yeah, you got somebody rage scooping and getting the fuck out of there, but they already came in hot off a previous game. You were just over seasoning a dish that was already too salty. You know what I mean? And like you said, Tony, like the pregame conversation can't capture all these details. If someone is like, do you have MLD or stacks? I don't think your mind goes to a very niche planeswalker ult that you might have in a deck that you may not have ever used before in your life.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think if anything, you could have maybe read the room and been like, yo, this dude's going to salt off like crazy if I blow up lands, because that was in the pregame conversation, and pivoted and not done it. But the game's got to end.
Yeah. Even then, I almost feel like it's more of a game of in that kind of a scenario, it is like basically over. So yeah. I feel like when I see that writing on the wall, I'll tend to be like, okay, guys, this isn't the most fun thing for everyone else, but I'm going to win because of this, right? Like, we can play it out if you want, or we can just like call it here. And like, sometimes just presenting the thing of like, do we want to just call it? Because we know that it could be another three or four turns of like painful, like draw, go, nothing really happens for everyone else, is worth it to like put out there. And maybe the table will be like, yeah, we just want to like quit and like shuffle up and start a new one. Or maybe they've got a mic at the table who's like, I got to play to my out. So let's play through every fucking one of those scenarios.
It'll be short. I'll draw nothing and go, and then you'll kill me. Like,
I like presenting the choice.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
I know you don't.
I don't like that. Because I'll say when I'm ready to surrender, you know? I'll say it. But yeah. I do think that it's very clear when the game is at that point. And
yeah,
there's some level where like this player, Tim, did just do that. They're like, okay, this is done. And their form of that was completely leaving the lobby. I think to me, the big thing this story talks about is like kind of the sad way that playing Magic with, you know, no kind of social requirement attached to it gets a little bit sad. Like,
yeah,
if Tim hung out and was like, okay, even if they all say, oh yeah, you probably win, maybe they get a second game in, like maybe they have a better game the next time. Maybe they, you know, at least talk about it in a little bit and are like, that was pretty cool. I can't believe we had so many board wipes. You know, you get a little bit of that like pleasant interaction.
See, that's the thing, Mike. Nobody says that. Nobody's like, cool, I loved all those board wipes.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying that.
I know you're saying it because you're playing them, but like.
Or even staying around to be like, oh, that was too many board wipes in that game. Like, yeah. You know, that even that is kind of in some ways a nicer way of heading out than like completely dipping. So
yeah,
I think to me, it's just like, it's very easy for a player to walk away with the salty part of those experiences in an online format, which is a bummer. Whereas like in person, there's always kind of those opportunities for those last few like closing remarks to make the game not feel like it ended on like a weird note.
Definitely.
And so I think in some ways, Tim, by like leaving in a huff in a lot of these games, like maybe they're saving themselves of some mental anguish from getting hit by a Liliana that's big and has a sword on her. But I think it's also kind of depriving yourself of something a little bit.
I agree. Yeah. I think a lot of this is just like the situation of spell table and anonymous online play kind of exacerbating how some of those reactions go down, where, like you said, Mike, if it was in person, you would just, the game would end and you would talk it out a little bit, or maybe Tim would scoop and go blow off some steam and then come back and you could talk about it a little bit more. So it is kind of unfortunate when you have a game end on such a sour note.
Yeah. What are you going to do though?
Get good.
True. I just got a permit approved by Msha, so I think we can go deeper into the mine to a new vein.
Nice. Oh, not too deep though.
Not too deep, but we get a little bit deeper.
We'll dig deep. We just won't dig greedily, and then we'll be set, right?
Oh, exactly. Man. I only know one way to dig though, dude.
Deep and greedily.
And greedily. All right, so this next story comes to us from Chase, and this is a Gmail submission. Yes, there's another way you can submit stories at thehowlingsaltmine@gmail.com. You can just fucking email them to us, y'all. And this post is titled Salt Dispenser, and it goes, hey guys, I just wanted to share some salt from last night. While I wasn't the one getting salty, I will admit to being the one dispensing salty vibes. I was playing my Don Andres deck in a pod of four.
Don.
The One Piece.
It's real.
It's real. Don is a thing in the One Piece TCG. Okay. I was playing in a pot of four against Beckett Brass Unsinkable, the Prismatic Bridge, and Bernard Ginger Sculptor. My opener held my favorite card in the deck, Commandeer. I was foaming at the mouth, waiting for someone to play something big into it.
The old Commandeer,
dude. It's
just
fucking
your average run-of-the-mill deer.
Yeah, just
a common deer.
Just your common deer. White tail. Trotty little hooves.
That's good, dude. That's a good joke, man. I like that a lot. That brought me great joy. I didn't pick up on it at first. I was like, ooh, that's good. I dig it. I was foaming at the mouth waiting for someone to play something big into it. Turns went on and Brass played a Gilded Lotus. Not big enough for a Commandeer.
Mm-hmm.
I needed a bigger score. He passes to the Prismatic Bridge player. And granted, the Prismatic Bridge player hadn't done a whole lot that game except a ramp. But as soon as I saw them tap seven, I knew I was about to pull off the heist of the century. He taps his mana and casts a Chromatic Orrery. Stonks. That's what it says. That's just not, that's not my commentary. It says stonks.
It's not editorial on that. That's a
part of the story.
It's part of the pastiche that's here. I slam my commandeer on the table to the bridge player's disgust. I don't remember what he said, but it was something along the lines of go fuck yourself. I told him I'd been holding onto the commandeer since turn one and was waiting for something big, and he argued that the Gilded Lotus the brass player played was more worthy of the commandeer than his orrery. That's fucking not true at all.
That's not even so obviously wrong.
So not true. We'll read these cards afterwards, listener, and you will know how untrue that is. I said, nah, I was stealing so many creatures from everyone that the orrery was drawing me 3 to 5 cards on each of my turns. I was drowning in value. Despite being so ahead on board, eventually the Bernard player was able to Moonshaker Cavalry the table to death, but I still felt vindicated in my action. Lesson for the day is if you're going to do crime, do it big. Sorry for the long story. It's not long. Don't worry. You're cool. Hope you guys are doing well. Merry Christmas. Oh, this is an old story.
Oh. Hey. Merry Christmas to you too.
Merry Christmas, dude. All right. Gilded Lotus. Let's kick it off there. Let's just read Commandeer.
Also, this is, I just want a point of order. This is indeed a crime because you're targeting one of their spells. So mechanically, it is a crime.
So Commandeer is 5 and 2 blue, but you'll almost never cast it for that. And it's an instant. And it says you may exile 2 blue cards from your hand rather than pay the spell's mana cost.
Mm.
Gain control of target non-creature spell. You may choose new targets for it. If the spell is an artifact, enchantment, or planeswalker, the permanent enters the battlefield under your control. Fucking cracked card. Did not need to be free.
That
it's
is
fucking
fucked.
Gross.
That is super gross.
It's so messed up. It's so messed up. And it's messed up because it's not even that good of a card. I mean, it doesn't see play in CEDH, for example, because paying often. Sometimes it does, but not often.
It's played in Eureka.
I mean, if I can take your fucking
Eureka,
sure.
In Eureka, because it's expensive and useful still. But
And you can cast it for free.
That's niche and specific, I guess.
I don't know. If I could take anybody's one ring, it feels like worth it.
Dude, or steal somebody's fucking Thassa's Oracle and then cast your own Demonic Consultation.
Well, you have to hit the non-creature spell. You can't hit the creature spell. But
well, you make it an artifact.
No.
While it's on the stack?
Yeah. I mean, in this situation, I'm also running Mycosynth Lattice, so...
The only thing is it's 3 cards. You're ditching 3 cards from your hand. So
yeah, it's like a lot. It's a high cost.
The One Ring, even as an example, like maybe it's not worth it. You have to activate the One Ring twice to be even on card parity with what you pitched to steal it with Commandeer. Like maybe you have on tap, whatever. Like One Ring's maybe a bad example, but you do have to be willing to trade 3 cards for 1 card. So like
for the free cast.
Gilded Lotus, just getting you 3 mana.
Yeah.
Not worth it.
5 mana, tap for 3 mana of any one color.
Chromatic Orrery.
Ooh.
Tapping for 5 mana and then paying 5 and tapping to draw cards. That means you can replace the card disadvantage that you lost with that Commandeer. So, yeah, way more worth it.
Even if it was purely 3 mana versus 5 mana. Like,
yes, right?
One taps for 3, one taps for 5.
And Chromatic Orrery also says you can spend mana as though it were mana of any color.
Yeah.
7 mana cost makes all your mana rainbow mana, adds 5 colorless, which is rainbow mana, and then pay 5 and draw potentially 3, 4, 5 cards, you know? Like, it's fucking crazy, man.
This is clearly the right move. Don't get me wrong, bridge player. If I was you, I also would have told them to go fuck themselves.
Me too.
Like,
yeah.
And I would have definitely been like, this is not the right move. It is the right move. I feel that you know this too, bridge player. Yeah. But like, I do stand behind you in what you said in the moment, for sure.
So good, dude. I just love that it was in their opening hand and they were just like hanging on to it the whole time. It's fucking amazing.
The only deck I run this in is Ovika, and it does that. It has that habit of just being in your opening hand and being juicy, so you want to keep it. And then it just sits there and you're in that hand for so long, sometimes without the two blue
cards,
and then suddenly the two blue cards start sitting in your hand too. Yeah. Exactly.
That is kind of the drawback with Commandeer. Like you said, Mike, it's a high resource card. 7 mana or 3 cards is like kind of a steep ask.
3 cards is truly a lot of cards. It's half your opening hand, you know. Yeah. Like, it 3 cards is a tall ask, and I think people underestimate how painful it's going to be to try and even cast the spell. But when it hits, it hits.
I hope that a patron asks you to draw it as a custom token, as a common deer.
As a common deer. Just a very bland looking deer.
Super basic. Very common.
Yep.
Very common.
We have a lot of common deer in New England.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
all
in Michigan.
Deer almost.
Lots of deer in Michigan. Holy shit. There's so many fucking deer in Michigan.
True life. What do we think about the salt rating here on this one?
Dude, it's a fucking sugar break. I'm like smiling so much. Like, okay, from the Prismatic Bridge player, they're salty. I get it. You lose your big thing. You tapped out for 7 mana. That fucking sucks. It's the same when someone like mana drains your big spell. You're just like, fuck you, dude. Like, you're just doing it for the value. You're not doing it because the thing I'm casting is threatening. You're just doing it because you're getting value.
You care about how good this is for you. You don't even care about how much this hurts me.
Exactly. Like, literally.
But shoe on the other foot, not only is this hilarious, fucking over Prismatic Bridge player is a tale as old as time. Everyone should be doing that because that's like stupid. And it always feels good when you fuck them over. So, I mean, I'm cool with it, man. Like, I love it. Low salt for me personally. But granted, you know, we have a unique perspective here. I think if the bridge player sent the story in, it would be very different.
And a fucking blue player just fucking playing free spells, like, countered my orrery, which it didn't need to be. Worse, they fucking stole it.
Yeah, you just had Tony at your table.
Yeah, man. Oh, man. I love that shit. Man.
Hell yeah. Well, should we round this bad boy out?
Let's do it. Let's round it out.
Do it.
So this next one comes to us from our Patreon, and this one comes to us from our buddy Accidental TPK. You know him. You love him. You hear his name every single week. And this post is titled, No Hope for You.
Sounds bleak.
Sounds so bleak, dude. It sounds so bleak and intense. And the story goes, I was playing with my best friend and his wife. He decided to play a high power casual game, so I whip out my Tiamat Dragon Tribal deck. My best friend pulls out Dahada, Binder of Wills, Legends, and his wife pulls out Lathras, Dragon Queen Tribal. Okay. This is a 3-player game. This is where we're going, folks. For the first few turns, myself and Dahada are in an arms race, and Lathlis is missing land drops with only 3 lands on the battlefield. I'm able to get out a Belby's Portal, and then I use Tiamat to fill my hand with dragons. I put a bunch of dragons on the field, and Dahada kept removing them. After a particularly rough set of removals, the Lathlis player decided to pump up her dragons with Lathlis and kill me outright. With my blocks, about half of her dragons died because she forgot about my Crucible of Fire, which I think is a +2/+2 for all your dragons, I want to say. We offered for her to walk back her attacks if she wanted to, but she declined, saying that she had a plan. At her second main phase, she casts a Blasphemous Act. The Dahada player then points out that none of his creatures die thanks to having Audric Lunarch Marshal and an indestructible creature on board. She is super done with the game at that point and refuses another offered walk back, and her board is destroyed. My Tiamat deck is known as a boogeyman in our pod and also was 5-0 since we started tracking our stats. I mentioned this fact as I was packing up the deck, and she cheers, I killed Tiamat. Me and my best friend immediately pointed out the fact that Dahada was steamrolling the whole game, and so it was a flimsy argument to claim that she was the one who killed the deck, but she was doing nothing the whole game.
Oof. Oof.
So mean. TPK, no. My best friend then turns and swings for lethal after that and closes the game out. Now, was it a dick move taking her small shred of hope after 2 massive misplays? Probably. But hey, like Tiamat, you can't win them all.
Wait, but also, point of order, she didn't actually kill the Tiamat player, right? This is no. Next turn the Dahada player swings over and kills the Tiamat player?
Yeah, she didn't kill the Tiamat player, but she did kill Tiamat with the Blasphemous Act. So, you know, she removed Tiamat off
removed
the board.
His board. Sure. She didn't kill the Tiamat player, though. She just killed the Tiamat. I don't think you get
just
to...
Just killed the Tiamat.
I don't think you get to brag about that.
Yeah.
I think it's fair. If you're packing up your stuff and the Tiamat player is still alive, you didn't kill the Tiamat player.
Yeah. No, but you killed Tiamat.
You killed Tiamat, though. You did remove that commander, though.
Yeah. Well,
some people get a rise out of that, you know? Like, they... I removed your commander. Like, get fucked.
It's true, man. Like, yeah. I mean, sometimes when you have nothing, you have to like pull together
to look
scraps.
At anything that you did do.
Yeah.
And that's what they did.
Like TPK said, the shreds of hope. You have to pull together those little scraps and be like, but look at what I was able to accomplish. And then your friend and your boyfriend fucking smack it out of your hand and say,
there's
just
knock it down.
There's no hope. I do want to point out that Audric Lunarch Marshal only gives your creatures indestructible until end of turn. So your friend did cheat.
Huh? How did he cheat?
The Dahada player was like, well, all my creatures are indestructible because I have this Audric Lunarch Marshal out and an indestructible creature. And while that's true that Audric Lunarch Marshal can give keywords to other creatures you control, it's triggered at the beginning of combat and it only lasts until the end of your turn.
Each turn. Each combat. Each
was
combat.
Each? Oh. Oh.
Yeah, each combat.
That's fucking gross.
It was specified as second main.
Hey, Sam, if you read the card, it explains the card.
It was specified as second main, so...
Jesus, okay.
I mean, there is a question of...
That's fucking
gross. Oh, no, it's not a May either, so that definitely happened, yeah.
I have been reading that card wrong. When was this card printed?
A long time ago.
I have been reading that card wrong since Shadows Over Innistrad.
Yeah.
I've been reading that card wrong for fucking, like... a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like literally every time I look at it, I'm like, this is kind of shitty. And I like cast it aside. That's pretty fucking good.
Yeah.
Man.
Every
combat
during all combats, your creatures share all like keyword abilities.
That's
basically.
Insane.
Yeah. That's actually really pretty
that's
good.
So good. Holy shit, dude. Why is this not in my Alesha Humans deck? This is
because
so good.
You've never read it.
It's got three power.
It does have three power. Yeah, that does kind of disqualify.
You run a couple, though, that don't have
but
two,
Alesha
though,
has
right?
First Strike, and so if you just get any other creature out with Death Touch.
Or my fucking dude that gives my Legends Indestructible, and then everything has it? Oh, my God. Ugh. TPK. This story has been a roller coaster of emotion for me, man. Good Lord. I guess that first story was right, that you should read your cards. That's very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is directly the risk of the three-player game. It is what we warned it kind of about, right? Like, the tip of balance is very decisive in a three-player game. Like, if one player decides to invest a lot of the resources screwing one other player, then that third player benefits hugely from that instead of two players benefiting from it in a four-player game. So it's a little bit inevitable. The only way that works kind of is if the player that's getting resources directed at them is always truly the one that's the most far ahead. But it's really hard to like threat assess that and figure that out consistently.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's one of those things where if you go full pot committed to try to kill one player, generally you're both left in a bad spot. You're fully tapped out. And the third player swoops in and wins, you know? I mean, that's really when you want that fourth player to continue to balance things out. Mm. You know, to crush the tiny little bit of hope that your friend had one, is very funny. Like, let's be real. It's funny. But two, you did crush her a little bit.
Yeah, you can deliver that with more tact.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Did I miss it? Are they like newer to Magic 2? I feel like that was the impression I have for some reason. Maybe not.
No, it doesn't seem like it. I mean, they all seem like pretty solid decks.
Well, what do we think about the salt rating on this one?
It's so high, man. Like, I've been in that spot where you feel like you did fucking nothing all game. And then at the end, you're like, yeah, well, at least I did this. And to say something like that. And it's like so innocuous to be like, yeah, well, at least I fucking removed your thing once or twice. And everyone would be like, no, you fucking idiot.
Can you read the story? Doesn't she say she killed the Tiamat player? Isn't that what she says?
No, she cheers, I killed Tiamat.
She cheered. An exclamation of
pride.
Cheering.
I killed Tiamat. And then TPK and their best friend pointed out that actually Dahada was steamrolling the whole game. And that's a pretty flimsy argument because you didn't really kill the deck. You did kind of nothing all game.
Yeah.
Like, you know, give your buddy the tiny, tiny victories. Sometimes they need it.
It is a little bit just like, hey, I did a thing. And they're like, fuck you.
You actually did nothing. You insignificant.
You're irrelevant. You just ruined this game. Why didn't you play correctly?
This game would have been better as a 1v1. You did nothing. In fact, it was a 1v1. man, love
it. Kind of brutal.
Yeah, super brutal salt. But I mean, you know, TPK is aware. TPK says, like, yeah, it's a dick move.
Sometimes you gotta slap them down. I don't know what to tell you. Like, go and learn today.
I mean, Tiamat is like an evil dragon god, so you know, TPK was just embodying his commander for this
just
game.
Living the Vorthos
living the Vorthos.
Wow.
Oh man,
is it that time of the week, Sam?
You know it is.
Ooh, I think it is that time of the week, Tony.
Hell yeah. And it comes every fucking week, right? Am I right?
Yeah, it's the time of the week. It comes every single week. It's the time of the week where we say, Mike. What's the salty card of the week?
The salty card of the week is...
Reluctantly rolled, and I'm going forth. Hands are mulliganed. I shuffle with force. Pre-game actions, the turns begin. Waiting and sweating, I strive for the win. Each player maneuvers and muscles for rank. Sequencing my moves as I start to tank. Reckless and wild, we go through the turns. My decklist is potent and secretly stern. As we fight for our win cons like totals go down. The viewers get up and they get out of town. The game store is empty except for one man. Still grinding and shuffling as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago comedian left with the cup. But he's learning and striving and planning his turns. And thinking of the prizing for whom he still burns.
Gold fishing consistence. Gold fishing for speed.
Gold fishing all alone.
All
alone in his time of need. Because he tutors and loosier and puffs with the wind. He's mulling and shuffling ready to begin. He's going the distance.
That's it.
It's fucking excellent. Wow. That was great.
That is The Distance by Cake, requested by Ebes. Thanks, Ebes.
Wow.
And I had a lot of fun writing that one. And here's a secret. I'm going to record that one fancy style.
Yeah, good. Deserves it.
Yeah, it needs it. That song needs the backup, too.
I just figured you'd add some Boots and Cats or something.
It was so immediately recognizable that I don't think it needed the background. I was in it to win it from the first bar.
Hell yeah, dude. I'm glad. It only took listening to that song like 20 times today.
That's all?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, thank you for taking that song the entire distance, Sam.
Ooh, no problem, Mike. I appreciate
that.
The salty card of the week this week is Coma, Cosmos Serpent.
This card.
It is
fucking
three,
hate this card, dude.
Two green and two blue, so 7 mana for a legendary creature serpent, 6/6. Let's get into this novel of a text box. It can't be countered, so that's cool.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, dude.
Can't be countered.
Didn't need that.
At the beginning of each upkeep, create a 3/3 blue serpent creature token named Coma's Coil. Then it has another ability, sacrifice another serpent, choose one. Tap target permanent, its activated abilities can't be activated this turn, or Coma, Cosmos Serpent gains indestructible until end of turn. So it's a lot of text.
It is.
Like, generally, it's each upkeep, you're playing it, you're passing, you're getting a 3/3 on that next player's upkeep. So it kind of has this built-in indestructible right away from then, and then you can turn stuff off. So it does a lot. Tony, how do you feel about this one?
You know, I don't see it super frequently, so I don't have like a visceral reaction to it like Sam had, but it's like, it's pretty dumb. Like, I don't think it needed like all of those things on it, you know? even just the like sacrifice a serpent, give it indestructible, like okay, whatever. But also sacrifice a serpent and like fuck with other people's shit. Plus adding that into it being every upkeep. Like that's the really broken part, right? In a turn of the table, you'll get like fucking four. Like it triggers on your own, it triggers on everybody else's. Like I feel like anything in Commander that is on every upkeep usually is like pretty broken.
Yeah.
Because you're just getting value on everyone's turn and it like adds a new level to the game. And it is like a card that just wins on its own.
Yeah.
It really doesn't need anything else to win. Like you could run a Coma deck with 99 lands in Coma and you could win.
Like, yeah. You'd win a couple games here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like unreasonable that would happen, which is like crazy. I just don't like that.
Yeah,
that could happen.
Totally.
Those are my main thoughts on it.
Sam, how do you feel?
Dude, I got a lot to say about this card. I fucking hate Coma, man. It's so pushed. It's such a pushed design. If this was printed in 2024, it would have Ward 5 probably. in addition to not being able to be countered. It's just fucking so gross. Like it overwhelms the board with 3/3 bodies, which is already a lot. Like you compare it to things like Primal Force, I want to say, is something I might be getting that wrong, but there's a green creature that puts a Sapperling in on everybody's upkeep. And like a 1/1 and a 3/3 is a big difference. A 3/3 is a great blocker and even a good attacker in a pinch. But when you can sacrifice serpents and control the board, like you can protect Coma with the indestructible and you can tap a permanent and make it so the activated abilities can't be activated.
And it's a permanent.
Yes, any permanent, which is fucking disgusting. So you can like turn off a land. Granted, they could tap it in response. You could drop it on a Sisse and it can't activate. You could put it on a Marath and it can't activate. You could put it on a Selvala and it can't activate. It
just, One
like,
ring.
It's like silence for activated abilities. And who cares about sacrificing a serpent because you just got fucking four in the last rotation of the table.
Yeah.
It's not a resource that matters, you know?
If there's something that you're going to have to like jump with the serpent.
Yeah, you block and then you sack it.
Or you just sack it before you even have to do the block to tap the thing down. And then if it's got trample, you're not even taking the trample damage or whatever.
Yeah, like not only can you turn off activated abilities, but just being able to tap stuff. I think in EDH in general, you don't see a lot of tap effects because they're not as good to just tap down one creature. It's a lot better in 1v1. But like Coma is an exception to the rule. To be able to tap things whenever you want at instant speed with this replenishable resource that you have is insane. It's super, super strong. I will say I did just buy one.
Right now?
No, like a couple days ago.
Wow.
It's one of those things where they could have done it instead. They've been adding text more and more to cards of like activate this only as a sorcery. And if they had done that, I think it would have been...
It'd be trash.
But it would have been like way more fair. Like, does Simic need another one of bullshit card like this? Like, I feel like they keep doing this to like Golgari cards and it upsets me. And like, so I'm like, do it to Simic. Like, fuck Simic.
Okay. You have to give this card some credit. Okay.
Why?
Yes. For two things. It is a Simic card and it's missing two separate words.
Yeah.
It doesn't have draw and it doesn't have land.
That is so true. That is so true.
It's actually one of the more unique Simic commanders.
This is the Simic card that we've been asking for years.
We dream of this card and this is what they give us.
So you run like 20 Simic land draw commander cards and the command zone and lands, and so then like
guess that's true. Yes. Like, so I will say my last piece of salt for this before I pass it over to you, Mike, is the flavor of the Coma coils has always been something I've hated. Like I love the flavor of this card, I really do. I loved Kaldheim. I think it was a beautiful set.
Yeah, it was a great one.
So well designed. The flavor of it was just awesome with the Norse mythology influences. So Coma, the cosmos serpent, is supposed to be like the analog for Jormungandr, the world snake, who, you know, like was there at the beginning of time and is like the Ouroboros kind of thing and stuff like that. So the flavor of these Coma coils is intended to be that this snake is so impossibly long that just a coil of its body rises up. It's a, like the flavor of Coma is that it's slowly rising out of the water and these coils are appearing, like a coiled portion of its existing body. But when you look at the Coma coil token, it's like an individual snake, like another little baby snake. and that's fucking wrong. And this pissed me off ever since they fucking released the card. I'm like, that's not what Jormungandr does. He doesn't make tiny little snakes. He has an impossibly long body, and the coils come up. And I've seen some really dope, like, alters. I think Dead Rat Art had a really awesome one that repaints the Koma's coil, like a coiled section of Koma's body. But man, that has always pissed me off. That little flavor fail. I never liked that shit. How does this make you feel, Mike?
Well, now I'm getting a little cranky. Who's the artist on that token? Should we
put them on blast?
Should we just be bad mouthing artists these days?
No.
No, I'm kidding. It's cool. It's just I hear you on the
flavor issues,
flavor failure of it. I think the most I saw this card was playing Kaldheim Limited, which I played an obscene amount. It's one of the sets that I got like set completion on Arena, which means I played way too much of it. Yeah, it's brutal in a 1v1. This is such a definition bomb for like a limited game or a 1v1 game. But I think this card is really rough in Commander. I think one of the problems with it is it's just a little slow. Like it's not Craterhoof. You're not dead when this comes down. You're just inevitably likely to be dead in four turns.
Yeah.
Which is it's cool that like, you know, that has this play pattern, but it sucks because then immediately you're just waiting for someone to get a non-destroy removal piece. You can't deal with it with combat. You can't deal with it for so many reasons. You can't always like jump it, or like they might just be able to tap your stuff down. I think it's pretty rough.
There's a hopelessness to it. There's a hopelessness and an inevitability that it's like when it hits, you're like, this is going to win eventually, but not as fast as I want it to win.
Yeah, not fast enough that I know I'm dead already.
Yeah.
But you can sometimes just be like, well, guys, I don't have any way to deal with that. I don't have exile in the deck right now, or like I don't have exile in my hand rather. So like you can't deal with it sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I also think it just hits it in a weird part of the power level a little bit. Like I feel like it's a kind of classic like bomb kind of thing that, you know, your value simicky stuff or like your decks that are ramping up and then playing these huge bombs. Like it's a classic one on that angle too.
Yeah.
And it almost falls into like being staple-y. Like if you're building that kind of deck, you're probably going to throw a Koma in it. Like if you're building an Emoti deck or something, or building like...
What do you mean?
Whatever Simic bullshit deck, or like your Prismatic Bridge, like whatever your deck that's based around dropping huge
coming for both of us
baddies
huh?
out. Yeah, exactly. What
I mean,
else am I here
put
for?
It in my bridge deck, so.
Someone's got to do it. If the point is dropping huge fatties out, you're going to drop this out.
Yeah.
That's frustrating. And like you said, the hopelessness of it is kind of annoying. But I do think it's nice that it's a non-land draw Simic commander. I appreciate that.
It's just pushed in a different fucking way.
Yeah.
It's the definition of game warping. The gameplay immediately warps around Koma, trying to deal with the Koma because it'll run away. It's like a slow snowball, but it snowballs, you know?
You're untapping with 15 power of attacking creatures.
Yeah.
If you don't have to sacrifice any of these, you know? And that's in one turn rotation. So if you're looking at purely like power, it's like putting a World Spine Worm down for 7 mana. You know, and then being able to attack with it the next turn.
But when I put a World Spine Worm down, it was free because I played it with Bridge. So
yeah.
Ooh! Mike, where does this fall in the top 300 salty cards?
What a wonderful question. Why don't you take some guesses?
I already got mine written down, baby.
I'm locked in already.
I wrote it down as soon as you announced the card.
Throw what you know.
Mine is 93.
Oh, mine's 232.
Tony, buddy, Sam wins it.
Fuck.
Yo.
I gotta stop trusting.
Let's go.
It's 106.
How I feel about it.
106, yes. Dude. Fuck. I'm fucking close, man.
My original number was 136. I gotta stop changing
my number.
I've
been doing well, man. You gotta go with your heart, you know?
I know.
Except the last time you went with your heart, you shouldn't have done it. But this time, you should have gone with your heart.
I should have gone with my heart this time. I would have been close. But
yeah.
Damn.
106.
Love man, it, that many people sad about it. Huh. That's
dude, fuck this card. It's Scourge of the Casual Table.
How many decks is it in?
It's in 5% of the available decks for it. So it's in 41.
That's a lot.
41,000 decks on
it just got printed in a precon.
Yeah, it's down to 350.
Yeah. It's fucking cheap.
So that's kind of nice, honestly.
It was in a Murder at Karlov Manor precon. Remember in the Murder at Karlov Manor story when fucking Koma appeared?
Yeah, and he summoned a minion serpent that he called Coil. That was its name. All right, well, that wraps it up for the Salty Card of the Week.
Well, thanks, Mike. That was a lovely Salty Card. And thank you to all of our listeners out there, and a special thanks to our Salt Packet Plus tier members. You know we got to shout them out. And this week we have Thoughtimus Prime, Rothbox, Bathroom Entity, Bobo Fett, Brandon Mousecop, Chameleon, Captain Kraz, Clearbrook, D. Beeson, Gilgamesh, Doug's Dad,
woof,
Firehawk
woof.
Ash, Ebes, Joe Danson, Hez, and Vok. It's going to be a long list.
That's a long list.
It's a sizable list. thank you all for your support. Again, I've been in the token drawing week where I just do nothing but draw tokens, and it's been a ton of fun. So I'm really excited to send all that shit out to you guys. And thank you so much for your support. And thank you to everybody else, all the other prospectors out there that hang out with us every single week and tune in and listen to our fun, salty stories. We really appreciate all of you. If you're looking for more Howling Salt Mine in your life, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/howlingsaltmine. We have our monthly extra salt shows. We have our weekly stray grains, all the little tangents that don't make it into the final episode. We cut all of those and put them up on the Patreon so people can still listen to them and enjoy them. I think in the last episode, I mentioned that we had like 60 or something of those at this point. So we got a lot of like really absurd, silly content. Generally, those are like some of the goofiest things that we have. And some of them we've intentionally put in the stray grains because we don't want them out on the main feed. They're like, you know, a crazy personal story or something. So if you want some of that shit, like it is worth checking out. It's very fun.
I feel like it's interesting because what I do describe, like I have a bunch of like friends and stuff that I'll talk about the podcast with and I'll be like, oh, and we have additional content. They're like, what additional content do you have? And it's like, well, once a month we have like an extra episode that everybody gets to listen to, and then we have all these stray grains, all these little bits that like don't make it, and they're like, well, like what? And I'm like, the one that always comes to mind is I'm like, Tony versus the Power Company. Like, literally,
the Power Company's a good
like,
one.
It's me bitching about the infrastructure of Michigan for like 10 minutes. Like, and then they're just like, nice, cool.
Or like the LGS bathroom one is one I think of, where I tell a story about a really gross LGS's bathroom that I was in one time. Or we have another bathroom themed one where Tony and I tell a story about this horrible bathroom that we went into at MTG Summit. It's just all the funny little tangents that, you know, you hear a lot of them in the show. We try not to cut them, but sometimes you have one that's, it's like 15 minutes. It's like, we can't have
they're just long,
5 minute intro. Like, we gotta cut this shit. So it's a good time. We also have a thriving Discord community, and we're doing monthly Patreon game nights that have been really well attended and just a shit ton of fun getting to know the community, playing games with everybody. And people are playing games weekly. Like the Discord has kind of evolved into this place where people are grabbing pickup games. We've got people learning how to play CDH for the first time in kind of like a fun and supportive space. So it's just a really, really good time. Another way you can support the show is to send us your salty stories. I already mentioned it a couple times, but you can send those through our website or you can send them to our Gmail. All of the links are in the show notes, so you can find them very, very easily. Another way to support the show is to get some of our merchandise. The best merchandise that we have right now, I gotta say it, it's the fucking playmats from Jank Mats. These playmats are thick as fuck. The art is super crisp. We've compared it against a bunch of different playmat manufacturers out there, and Jank Mats just has the quality. They do it right, man. It's a small operation. They really, really care about that shit. And we are quality nuts. Like, you should have seen... You should have been there for our discussion when we were talking about these playmats. Like, we go hard. We analyze everything. And these are high-quality products. You can also check out our Bonfire store. We have funny t-shirts. We've got 1-800-ARE-YOU-FLAPPIN. You can get the Howling Salt Mine logo over there. Another way you can support the show is to give us a 5-star review in your favorite podcast app of choice. Oh, I should have mentioned this at the beginning, but Google Podcasts is probably going away. I'm going to be mentioning this a little bit more. But if you listen on Google Podcasts, consider migrating to something new. Spotify seems to be a very popular place to listen to podcasts. And they've been very supportive for us. So that's a cool place to check out. Or Apple Podcasts or something like that. But giving us a 5-star review helps us stick out in the algorithm. It helps other people find us naturally. These days, that's how most people find our podcast, is through a Spotify suggestion or something like that. So it goes a long way to help push the podcast into new listeners' ears. Lastly, we got to shout him out every episode. Devin Burnett, our tattoo buddy who designed our beautiful podcast art that we rock every single week. If you're ever in Asheville, North Carolina, hit him up and get a tattoo because he's a really cool dude.
10,000 subscribers are bust.
Indeed. Well, thanks again, everybody, and stay salty. And don't forget to draw an additional card during your draw step.
It's the Howling Songbird.
If I can talk while I'm crushing arena and stream, I can listen while I'm crushing arena and stream. All right. Okay. Thank you. Welcome to my TED Talk. Let's do an episode. Don't put that content in the world anywhere.
I'll put that last little bit. You just made that very end a blooper. In the course of the discussion, and I was forced to play another bird, another bird wipe. Bye, Mike.
Bye.
I didn't understand that that's what was happening. I thought he was just making either. Kissy faces at us. And I was like, that's cute.
when he did the peace sign, I finally realized it. I thought he was like mocking me while I did my spiel, which I'm used to at this point.